talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning, I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Lynn Venhouse.
And welcome to this week's exciting episode of We Are Movie Geeks podcast. Lynn has joined us. Lynn reviews movies over at the Belleville News Democrat, as well as the Kirkwood Webster Times. Do you know my wife was on the cover of the Kirkwood Webster Times a couple weeks ago?
Really?
Yep.
Well, I will have to look it up.
You'll have to look it
up.
Yeah,
she held the numbers up really nice in that photo, I thought.
She did.
And the profile was better than the full frame. No, I'm kidding.
She's a lovely woman.
She is. I'm joking.
Okay.
Yeah, she was doing her civic duty on,
she was,
on the cover.
She was voting, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, she was.
And so.
Yes.
But we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about this morning. A lot of local stuff. And it's one of our favorite actors' 100th birthday this week. We're going to talk about that. But we only have three movies to review, so that's good.
Yeah. Well,
we're going to talk about a lot of these awards. All these awards have come out in the past week.
Including ours is upcoming, St. Louis Film Critics.
Yeah. Some of these are real head-scratchers, if you ask me, but we'll get into that a little bit later. Let's start out with the top 12 of the box office. You know what's not on the top 12 of the box office?
Rules Don't Apply?
Poor Warren Beatty. He was number 12 last week when this movie made $1.5 million. Now he's not even in the top 12.
I was going to say he was number 12 last week, you say?
Yeah,
right?
No.
So he's completely fine. Billy Lynn's not in there.
Now he's long gone. I don't think Billy Lynn was in there last week.
He's still walking that halftime walk.
Both pointless movies. Warren's movie is a meandering mess, and also it has this fabulous cast and its drive-by appearances.
Well, it's gotten so much hype. I mean, like 2 years ago, they were whispering about this movie. Ooh, Warren Beatty's coming back with this Howard Hughes movie. I think part of it's the title. That's like the worst title. Rules Don't Apply. They should have called it Horn Dog Howard or something like that. It would have made more money.
About people who don't live by the rules.
Oh, yeah, but
and
still, it's a forgettable title.
Or well, maybe Howard Hughes of the Starlet would have been a nice...
anything.
Yes, yes.
Rules Don't Apply.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, well.
And the chauffeur.
I don't feel too sorry for Warren Beatty.
No. He's had
a good career. And
he's still living off that Dick Tracy money, so he's doing
right.
Okay.
All right. Let's get started. Number 12 was Edge of 17, made $1.6 million.
I finally saw that.
Oh, did you?
That's charming. And I'll tell you, Woody Harrelson is the most forgiving, understanding school teacher ever in the history of cinema.
Yeah.
He's great.
Number 11 is Manchester by the Sea, which is only playing in 156 theaters, so the fact that it cracked the top 11 is pretty good. I went and saw it Saturday night over at the High Point. It was packed. Packed, I tell you.
Really?
And the High Point's a huge theater.
I was going to say that was the main one, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, great.
Oh,
that's
probably,
great to hear.
We saw it Saturday at 7. There's probably 300 people there.
Oh, good.
Almost Christmas. Jim reviewed that. That made $2.5 million in its second week.
And number 10, you say, still hanging in
number
there.
Number 9 is Incarnate, which is a horror film that I saw. And that's the only movie debuting that's in the top 10. I guess not too many movies debuted over the weekend. But that's the only one that made the top 10 that... In its first week, it made 2.8.
Well, I'll talk about when the debuted, but I'm sure it's not even in the top 20. So.
Okay, and then we got number 8 is Bad Santa 2, $3.2 million in just a second week, so it's not doing very well.
I saw a lot of that the other
day. Hacksaw Ridge is still holding strong. It's been around for a month or so. $3.4 million at number 7. Number 6 is Trolls, $4.6 million. Number 5 is Doctor Strange, $6.4 million.
Yeah.
Allied is at number 4 with 7.0.
Glad it's doing so strong.
Million.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's good. Arrival, which
that's
we didn't
a
really
big
care
switch.
For.
Yeah, that was number 4 the last
still
2 weeks.
Number 3.
Well, no, it was number 4 the last 2 weeks.
Number 4, okay.
And
well, it's number 3 this week.
Because it has Oscar buzz.
Does it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and Amy's up for
whatever.
A couple of awards. Amy.
That made 7.3, and Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is number 2 with 18.5 million. I didn't see that, did you?
Yes.
Oh, did you like it?
It's delightful.
It's delightful.
Okay. Yeah.
I didn't see it. I didn't even see number 1, which was Moana.
You haven't seen Moana yet.
I watched about a half hour of it, and I had to walk out because these people sitting behind me were bugging me, and they ruined the movie for me.
Oh, well, it's got such a peppy Lin-Manuel Miranda score. He did the lyrics to some of the really clever songs, but the animation is beautiful.
Well, I heard that some people are complaining about it. Did you hear about that over the weekend?
No,
the politically correct police are saying it doesn't capture that culture properly or something that like that.
Oh,
I think they took great pains to culture.
A Disney spokesman said they went, they did a lot of research to show respect for the Polynesian culture.
Yeah, they fly the artists out there and everybody,
But it just goes to show that there's always going to be somebody who's going to complain.
My only beef with it is I think the plot's pretty dense for little kids.
I guess Maui is great. He's the scene stealer in that film. Yeah.
And that's The Rock.
All right. I got to go see that, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, like I say, we got a lot to talk about. So let's get started with our reviews. We got three movies to review: Miss Sloan, Man Down, and Incarnate. Jim, you saw Miss Sloan.
Winner. Lots one step ahead of the opposition.
We have to make it personal.
You know the word annihilate? It means reduced to nothing.
This is more important than my career.
It was mind-boggling.
You crossed the line.
Ingenious.
Bugging and
completely unbelievable.
Stars are this Jessica Chastain, and she plays a lobbyist.
She is. She's playing a lobbyist.
Named Miss Sloan?
Her name is Elizabeth Sloan.
Gotcha.
And talk about your all-star cast. My gosh. Sam Waterston, one of your favorites. Jake Lacy is in it in a really unexpected part.
Who was Jake Lacy? Jake, the guy that was in Love the Coopers last year?
Yeah, he was in Love the Coopers, and he was much better served in Carol. He was the boyfriend of Rooney Mara's character. Young actor.
What's that one, How I Met, How to Be Single?
How to Be Single, yeah. That's not high on his resume. I think he's going to be listing this and Carol, because I think Miss Sloan is one of the best films of the year. It's got an extremely clever script. You see the commercials, you see it's about a lobbyist, and you go, oh, I'm not going to care about that. And then you hear a little bit of the plot, which I had heard in some of the preview entertainment magazines, that it is dealing with the issue of gun control, but it's not about that as much as it is about her as a person and how she's sort of dealing with everything.
Does she get shot at the end?
No, it doesn't. There are a couple of weapons brandished in it, but it starts out with her being part of a congressional investigation. They're hauling her before a congressional committee headed by, talk about a great cast, John Lithgow as a senator who's out to get her. And then we do a flashback, and she's part of this really prestigious, high-profile public relations firm. And the new assignment, they've been contacted by a representative. I don't know if they actually say he's with the NRA, but you assume he is. And there's some bit of legislation about threatening to go through that's going to tighten background checks to stop all this gun show sales and internet sales. And this fellow from the NRA says, well, what we've got to do is we've got to get the mothers on our side of America, the women people, the women, voters and things like that on our side, the women people, what am I saying? the ladies. And they believe that Elizabeth Sloan is going to be the one to handle this. And Sam Waterston is the head of this agency. And he brings her in, and she pretty much laughs in this guy's face. And it's like, no, you can't sell it to mothers because, all the kids getting gunned down. You're just crazy. And then she's at some sort of function, and she's doing a little schmoozing, and later she's contacted by a reporter who turns out to actually be from another public relations firm, a much smaller one, played by the great Mark Strong. And he says, why don't you come over to my side, because we're going to fight this bill and fight for this bill. And even though it's going to take a big cut in pay, she decides to do it. And she is going to take all of her staff with her, much to the consternation of her immediate supervisor, Michael Stahlberg, who's great in everything also. And
Who's bad in this film, Jim? You keep talking about who's great in this film.
Everyone's great at it. Everyone's terrific.
There's no weak link.
No, not a weak link in the whole. Although the subplot with Jake Lacy is a little iffy. I don't want to just spoil what.
So is Miss Sloan a villain, or is she
both? Yeah, she's a very complex character. She will go to any lengths to get the job done. And including putting spies and bugging people and sending private detectives after people. And it's really an interesting sort of profile of how money works and how people are influenced by different forces.
It's a long film, isn't it?
In Washington. It's about two hours, 220, something like that. But I don't think there's any real lag.
Who directed this film, Jim?
John Madden, the fellow behind, I guess, his best-known film is Shakespeare in Love. But he's kind of had an off-and-on type of career since then. But this is really strong work from him. It's very well done. I would love to see Jessica Chastain nominated for some awards for this, because she's turns in a terrific performance. And like I say, it's got a wonderful supporting cast. This young actress, Gugu Mbatha-Raw, who we saw in Concussion and was it Beauty? Or was it called Belle?
Belle,
that was Belle, yeah. She's great in it. She sort of plays Jessica Chastain's right-hand person who has an unknown past that we find out about.
And
Allison Pill is in it. She's terrific. So, just for the cast alone, it's worth seeing. And it's very engaging. It really makes you think, and it's got a lot of twists and a real punch at the end. So I recommend it.
All right. So Jim really likes Miss Sloane. Are you seeing that tomorrow night, Lou?
No, I'll be at the Fox for Finding Neverland.
Well, I believe Kate is going to review that for us. If I were reviewing it, I'd give it 4.5 out of 5
4
stars.
4.5? Yes, whoa.
Wow. All right,
it's so Jim, a good
one. Okay, so Jim likes Miss Sloane, and Lynn and I have not seen Miss Sloane. Jim and I also have seen Man Down.
He's my battle buddy. We kicked the doors together. We took enemy fire. It's just not a relationship you'd understand if you haven't been through it, I guess.
Starring Shia LaBeouf.
Lynn, dodged one.
I know. I think I dodged a bullet there.
Yeah.
I read about it beforehand, and I went,
Who's the director of this, Man Down?
Dito Mantel.
Who directed
Shia before in that Guide to Recognizing Your Saints.
Was Robert Downey in that?
I believe he was.
Oh, that was terrible. I remember seeing that. But this movie is equally terrible, Man Down.
Yeah.
This is really one of the worst movies of the year, and it's really boring. It's sort of a train wreck. It doesn't know what genre it wants to be. It's about, I guess it's about PSTD. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But they use PSTD is sort of a crutch. It's really just about four different time periods where this movie takes place, and one of them is in the future, this sort of bombed out apocalyptic future, which you kind of wonder what the heck is going on. He plays this guy, and he's got a wife and a young son, and at the beginning he's like he's in the future and he's looking for his son. Where the heck is his son?
He's with his best buddy too.
He's with his best buddy played by
Jay Courtney.
Yeah, and then they flash back to him in Afghanistan where he's a soldier. And then it flashes forward to him still in Afghanistan, where Gary Oldman is his commanding officer, who never leaves this chair behind his desk throughout the entire film.
He and the desk are one by the end.
Yeah,
of the film.
And then the other time zone it takes place in is, I guess, back at home before he goes to Afghanistan, where he's interacting with his wife and his kid.
His wife, played by Kate Mara.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely Kate Mara.
This movie's kind of a train wreck and on a lot of levels. It's very poorly written.
Boy, it's so muddy looking. Man.
Yeah.
It looks like it's shot through an old chocolate milk container or something. It's gray and brown and...
Well, IMDb says it was finished in 2015, which is a really bad sign when they keep it on the shelf. Why would they bring it out December 2nd?
Well, because there was nothing else, no big Hollywood releases. Manchester was a limited release, so there was nothing really to go up against. And still, I think it only played one theater here in town, I saw.
Oh, yeah.
So, it was over at the Mills, I think.
Well, really? That's only in one theater?
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm surprised. No, but I was almost going to put that in the review, but I was like, no.
It's got this twist, this sort of Shyamalan-style twist, which is really lame, because a good twist changes everything that happens before it, and this one doesn't at all. It's just stupid. And then you got Shia LaBeouf, who's actually, he's not a bad actor, and he's actually, fairly well committed to this performance, and he's okay for the first hour, but Shia just has this what I call anti-charisma. He just has a negative presence. You don't want to spend 100 minutes with this guy. He's just kind of a twerp.
That's what made American Honey so unbearable, because you were spending nearly 3 hours with him.
Yeah.
And he had some sort of, what's that called when you have the ponytail?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, in that one, yeah. But this one, his head is sheared very, very, very short. So he's doing a lot of time is devoted to the basic training sequences.
Yeah, and they're just right out out of every other movie.
With like Officer and a General.
Yeah.
And the weird relationship he's got with Jay Courtney in it, and it goes a direction where you think it's going to go, and it's just so ridiculous. And as you said, it is about PTSD, and there is even a sort of PSA, a public service announcement, before the end credits start in order to kind of make you feel like, you know, this was really something worthwhile, but it just trivializes a real problem.
It does. It's a real problem. And also, I had read a couple of reviews before I saw it. I wasn't going to go see it, and then I read a couple of reviews that said how horrible it was. I go, this sounds like kind of a fun train wreck movie that we can have fun with and make fun of on the podcast, so I'll go see it. But it's not fun. It's a waste of time. It's 100 minutes I won't get back. We compared it briefly to The Ninth Life of Louis Drax, which was an equally bad movie. Well, but at least that one was we had sort of fun with it.
And same with Billy Lynn. You had a little bit of fun with it because some of it was so ridiculous. So Boy Next Door, I think, is the real shining moment.
This one's just dull.
Leader on that. Yeah, it is, and it's just, like I say, it just trivializes everything, and it just gets so ridiculous. And the last 10 minutes is so heavy-handed and ridiculous, and you just want to throw your shoe at the screen. I was like, "Oh, come on!"
Did you review that for our site?
I did.
No, you gave it 1 star.
I was being too generous with 1 star.
Oh, wow! Right. Is it the kind of movie chimps could have typed?
Blind chimps.
With some booze in them, I guess.
Yeah. All right, let's move along from this awful movie, Man Down, which nobody's going to remember in a week.
Man.
And the only other movie we have to review is Incarnate. I saw Incarnate. I saw Friday night.
Who are you?
I'm going to help your son. I don't do exorcisms. I don't use religious methods to treat the symptoms. I go inside the victim's mind to treat the disease.
It's a horror movie from Blumhouse Productions, who always put out a horror movie every couple of months. Hmm. They're sort of medium-budgeted horror films. I'd say this one cost maybe $15 million. And they're all sort of derivative. This one is sort of a cross between The Exorcist and what was the one with Leo by Christopher Nolan where he went into your mind?
Shutter Island?
No, the other one.
Inception.
It's sort of a cross between The Exorcist and Inception, because you've got Aaron Eckhart, who plays this exorcist, and his name is actually Seth Ember. And
what?
Yeah, and he's in a wheelchair, and he's an exorcist, but he doesn't pray over you. He actually goes inside your mind once you're possessed by a demon. But he's in a wheelchair. And the reason he's in a wheelchair is because a couple years earlier, he and his wife and kid were involved in a car crash with a drunk driver, and his wife and kid were killed. But it wasn't really a drunk driver. It was a demon named Maggie. And so he's out
for revenge. That's a scary name.
Yeah. So he's out for revenge against this demon named Maggie. So this movie, Incarnate, it actually opens with him. He's in a wheelchair, and he's kind of needs a shave, and his hair's real stringy, and he looks real decrepit. But when he goes into your demon-possessed mind, he can stand and walk, and he looks real tailored, and his hair is all coiffed. And
kind of like Professor X in the X-Men movies. Yeah. He can be walking in the mind.
Exactly. So the story picks up with this 11-year-old who's possessed by a demon and goes and kills some homeless woman. And this little boy's mother is played by Carice Van Houten. So she actually is one of the main characters in the film. She was, you just mentioned, she was Leni Riefenstahl in
Race
earlier this year. And she was also in Paul Verhoeven's last film, The Black Book. She starred in that. She's a good actress. I really like her. Actually, Catalina Sandino Moreno, who was nominated for an Oscar a few years ago for a movie called Maria Full of Grace, she plays the representative from the Vatican who hires Seth Ember, and she picks him up and she hands him this dossier. It's like Mission Impossible or something, with this kid's picture. Oh, this kid's possessed. You need to go check out this kid. So Seth Ember is convinced that, I forget why, but he's convinced that the demon Maggie is inside this little boy.
And who is played by, actually, TV fans might know him as young Bruce Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
David Mazouz.
Okay.
He's on the TV show Gotham right now.
Yeah.
So,
all right. This movie is—it's not the worst horror film I've seen this year. I've seen a lot of good horror films this year, and I've seen a lot of bad horror films this year, as I do every year.
Is it better than The Forest?
It's probably somewhere in the middle. Oh yeah, it is better than The Forest. It's not a total waste of time. It flies by pretty quickly. It only lasts about 85 minutes. It's directed by Brad Peyton, who did San Andreas last year or 2 years ago, maybe. And it's a bit of a step back for him, but that was a really fun sort of disaster porn epic. And some of the stuff going on in the dreams or in the people's minds is sort of clever. There's some good special effects. I kind of liked Aaron Eckhart in this film. I have the feeling that there's going to be more adventures of Seth Ember. You know, we're going to see a sequel to this probably.
Depending on how well it does.
It only cost $10 or $15 million. I think if Mr. Eckhart wants a quick paycheck, he's going to probably sign on to part two.
As I say, there's not been an I, Frankenstein, too.
He did, but that was
a very expensive film, I, Frankenstein. Yeah. This is a much lower budget film. You can do worse. If you're a horror fan, I do actually sort of recommend this film. If you like to see every horror movie out there, you're not going to be too disappointed. Let's talk about some stuff going on locally. Tomorrow night is my 16mm night over at the Way Out Club starting at 8 o'clock. I'm showing 3 TV episodes, a Brady Bunch episode, Kitty Carryall is Missing, and Florence Henderson. We talked about her last week. She, of course, plays Carol Brady. So come out and celebrate the life and career of Carol Brady tomorrow night with a 16mm print of a Brady Bunch episode. Also an episode of the Beverly Hillbillies called Granny Learns to Drive. It's a first season episode. And the Johnny Sacco episode, Opticon Must Be Destroyed, where Johnny Sacco's giant robot fights a giant flying eyeball. That's tomorrow night. And then we'll end that with a 16mm print of Joe Kidd from 1972, starring Clint Eastwood, a great Clint Eastwood Western, co-starring John Saxon and Robert Duvall. That's tomorrow night over at the Way Out Club at Jefferson and Graboy. And now I can announce next month's lineup at my 16mm double feature night. That'll be January 3rd, I believe. It's just 4 weeks from tomorrow night. We just talked about Warren Beatty and how this movie, The Rules Don't Apply, is crashed and burned and is one of the bigger flops of the year. But in 1967, the movie that really kind of put him on the map as a superstar, wasn't his first movie, of course, but it was the first one that he got awards for, and that is Bonnie and Clyde. We're going to show that at 8 o'clock on January 3rd, a 16mm print of Bonnie and Clyde.
It's a great classic. Movie.
It is. It won a couple of Oscars. Estelle Parsons, I believe, won for supporting actress. And
Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
That put him on the map,
and Michael Dick Pollard.
And the first film appearance of Gene Wilder.
That's right. So that'll be... well, show that at 8 o'clock. And then after that, we're going to show a thriller from 1965 directed by William Conrad, believe it or not, called My Blood Runs Cold, starring Troy Donahue and Joy Heatherton.
Oh my goodness.
It's directed by, like I say, William Conrad, who... did he do some voices on the Bullwinkle show?
Oh, he was the narrator.
Yeah.
Wasn't he Cannon?
He was Cannon later on.
And he was Matt Dillon in the radio version of Gunsmoke.
Yeah, but the same year he directed Two on a Guillotine, which is a great movie.
Oh, it is Dean Jones.
Yeah,
the great, the late
Romero
great.
And
yeah.
Connie Stevens. So, and I've never seen My Blood Runs Cold. Have you ever seen that, Jim?
I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
I know Troy Donahue plays some kind of serial killer, and he thinks Joey Heatherton is the reincarnation of his lost love or something like that. I don't know. Again, that'll be
sounds like
January
good 60s
3rd.
Cheese.
Yeah, definitely. It's black and white, so I don't know. All right, let's see. Crush Groove, is it the Schlafly Wednesday? I think that's a hip-hop movie. I've never seen it. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Is that got the Run DMZ?
Yeah, I think. I don't know. It's made in like 86 or something.
Yes.
Christmas Story. Everybody loves Christmas Story.
Yes.
That's going to be a week from Friday at Schlafly at 7. I'll be hosting that. I hope you guys can make it.
Ho, ho, ho. Fragile. It must be Italian.
I think that says fragile.
Yeah, the 16th, right? That Friday night, the 16th.
Yes, exactly.
Red Ryder BB gun.
Yes. And Jack Frost is this weekend. It's part of Andy's late night grindhouse. Jack Frost was a movie about a killer snowman.
Look, I just saw something that doesn't belong in this world, and it's out there killing my friends. Now tell me what it is. Jack Frost.
Not to be confused with the Jack Frost with Michael Keaton, who was made a few years later. It went straight to VHS in 1997. I remember renting it, and it's not very good. I don't remember it being particularly good. I guess it has a cult following.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Was it a screening straight from the VHS copy?
Well, no, it came out on Blu-ray.
It did.
Yeah,
it did. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And Shannon Elizabeth, is that her name from the American Pie movie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was her first film, I believe.
Oh, my goodness.
I think she has a bathtub scene.
Oh, my.
So it's not totally worthless. Yeah. All right, that's Jack Frost at the Moolah. And then also this Saturday morning, I went to the High Point this past Saturday.
Yeah, that was Weird No Angels.
I saw Weird
right?
No Angels.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that with Humphrey Bogart? I did not like that at all. I'm not surprised it's not a Christmas perennial because it's not very good. The Christmas elements are kind of minimal for one thing. It's based on a stage play and it all takes place in one room. It was a real snooze, I thought. And then it's got Aldo Ray and Peter Ustinov and Bogart. And they're all three always together. None of them actually go off and do anything solo.
They remade it with Robert De Niro and Sean Penn, and that's equally awful.
Well, I kind of remember. Now, I saw that in the theater and kind of remember liking it, but I haven't seen it since it was new.
It's because Demi has an almost nude shower sequence in it or something. Demi Moore.
Gloria Talbot played that character in the 1955 version. But this weekend is a much better Christmas movie.
Oh, yes.
It's a Wonderful Life at 10:30 at the High Point Saturday morning.
Well, it was Joe Williams' favorite movie, and so the Tivoli
ran it as
part of his memorial service.
Yep, I was there, but I didn't stay for the movie.
I did. It was really good on the big screen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
All right. So I think that's about it as far as local stuff goes. We did lose Fritz Weaver. I know he's a respected actor and he won a Tony, but I can't really place him in too many movies. He was in the Crate episode of Creepshow.
Yeah, that's the first one
I thought of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know he was in Marathon Man and some other film. What did he win the Tony Award for?
I know he was, speaking of Broadway, I think he had the lead role in Baker Street, which was a short-lived musical based on Sherlock Holmes, singing Sherlock Holmes, of all things. But, I have him listed besides Marathon Man. He was in Black Sunday, which is one of our favorites, and Demon Seed.
But not the Black Sunday with Barbara Steele. The Black Sunday with Bruce Dern.
Yes, and
that's right, Demon Seed. He was Julie Christie's husband, I believe.
Yeah, and Day of the Dolphin he's in.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess his earliest really big movie is Failsafe. He's got a role in it, which is a classic. But, lots of TV, man. Mm-hmm. He did a ton of TV.
Yes.
A couple of Twilight Zones and Outer Limits and things like that. He was in my favorite episode of Tales from the Dark Side that Tom Savini directed, the great makeup artist, about the little creature that's living in this young girl's apartment.
Hmm.
And it's a wonderful episode if you can track it down. So he's very good in it. And, terrific actor.
All right, so rest in peace, Fritz Weaver, who made it to 90, but he didn't make it to 100. You know who did make it to 100, assuming he doesn't die in the next 3 days, is Kirk Douglas.
Wow.
Kirk Douglas was born December 9th, 1916.
Mm.
And we just celebrated Olivia de Havilland's 100th birthday a couple of months ago, and we talked about our favorite Olivia de Havilland films. Good for Kirk Douglas. 100. He outlived everybody. He outlived his Saturn III co-star Farrah Fawcett.
What I liked about Kurt, as you see in the movie Trumbo, is his social justice streak, you know?
Oh, sure,
he's
yeah.
stuck up for people, for what was right, and I liked him for that, too.
Kirk apparently never had, you know, bit roles. Kirk went straight to leading man. He fought in World War II and came out and got the lead role.
Was it
Strange Love of...
Martha Ivers.
Yes. Stanley.
Yeah, Out of the Past was after that, right?
Yeah, and he was the lead in that, so he went straight to the leading man status.
Like the third lead, it's like Van Heflin and Barbara Stanwyck and then Kirk, which is a heck of a premiere for somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that intensity.
And he was nominated for 3 Oscars, but now I'm blanking on what they were. Lust for Life. I know he's nominated for Best Actor for Lust for Life.
Not Ben the Beautiful, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah,
you know what? Let me look it up.
I know he's nominated 3 times. Yeah. Never won it. Never won an Oscar though. His son won an Oscar.
Boy,
he got a special one, right? Because and then
special ones don't count.
I know. That's just.
Anybody can get a special one.
They gave one to Cary Grant, and Alfred Hitchcock.
All the people they feel sorry for because they didn't give Oscars, they give them a special Oscar.
But they're worthy of an Oscar.
Oh yeah, Kirk Douglas is great. I love Kirk Douglas.
Oh,
he's one of my favorites. Let's talk about our favorite Kirk Douglas movies. I told you guys to choose your top three Kirk Douglas movies. I'll begin. Number one and two, I didn't have any trouble choosing. But number three, I was really torn between a couple of films. I really love The Vikings. Huh. I even have a soft spot in my heart for Saturn III, which I mentioned. I wouldn't put that in one of his top films, but it's sort of a guilty pleasure.
It's his cheesiest film, yeah.
Yeah, and even De Palma's The Fury is kind of a fun movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's not one of De Palma's best films.
See him running around Chicago, jumping around the bouncing on the L train.
Yeah, he's a very physical actor. Very masculine, physical actor. He did look at The Vikings. Look at some of the stuff he does in The Vikings where he throws those axes at that door on the other side of that moat and then climbs the axes up over the moat. It's amazing physical acting in that film. But for number three, I had to choose Billy Wilder's Ace in the Hole, which you can get on Criterion. I got the Blu-ray, and he plays sort of this cynical reporter, and there's somebody trapped in a hole, so he turns it into a big circus. It's quite an interesting film.
Yeah, they tried re-releasing that as The Big Carnival, didn't they?
Maybe it was called that on TV or something. It's. I don't think it did very well. I think people kind of scratch their heads. I think it's a movie that's aged really, really well. What's your number three, Jim?
Oh, gosh. Number three, I guess, would be, talk about 50s crowd pleasers, though the opposite of that, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea is mine. Mostly, well, for a big reason, it's the Walt Disney Company's first attempt at a live-action produced in America film. I think they had done some films that were produced in England prior to that, but this was their really first entry in it without any animation in it, but with some great special effects. Mm-hmm. The standout scene in that film being his big fight with the squid, the giant squid, on top of the Nautilus, which I think was that an Aurora model kit, I think?
It could have been.
I think so. I think I recall that. Him with the, little spear about to get the thing there, but he gets to sing in that movie. He sings Whale of a Tale.
And that's directed by Richard Fleischer, who also directed The Vikings.
Oh, yeah, who's the son of Max Fleischer, who was the creator of Betty Boop and those great Fleischer Studios animated cartoons.
Yeah, but Fleischer and Walt Disney were competitors.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of big of Disney to hire his son to direct their first live action film.
Oh yeah, there's a Disney TV show where Max meets Walt Disney.
Oh, yeah?
They talk about the early days of animation. It's very interesting. But the movie itself is really entertaining. Yeah. It's got gorgeous color. You know, for 1954, this must have been something to see a film with science fiction roots in glorious color. This might have been prior to Forbidden Planet around the same time, and it's one of the best adaptations of a Jules Verne novel, and it's got a terrific supporting cast too, besides Kurt in his white and red shirt showing off his rippling biceps. James Mason is wonderful as Captain Nemo, but I kind of refer to our buddy Paul in thinking that Vincent Price would have been a perfect Captain Nemo also.
But Peter Lorre.
And Peter Lorre's in it, Paul Lucas. And it's a great popcorn flick. It's very entertaining.
And Lynn, what's your number three favorite?
It would be Detective Story.
Yes,
Eleanor Parker. It got a bunch of Oscar nominations.
Did you find out what he was nominated for?
Yes, I did. He was nominated for Lust for Life, The Bad and the Beautiful, and Champion.
Champion.
So that was
it. I've never seen that either. I haven't seen
it. I'm going to be champion.
Yes. Well, Detective Story, he plays a black and white. It's in black and white, but he's an all by the book detective. Everything's black and white, but then he has a case that it's not so black and white, and so he it's really great movie by William Wyler.
Oh, yeah.
And it was very daring for 1952.
Isn't Lee Grant in that in a small role?
Yes.
Is she like a shoplifter or something like that?
Yes. So it's really a cut above Detective Story.
All right, well, good. My number two would be Spartacus, Stanley Kubrick's Spartacus, 1960. Seen it many times. It's just the great epic. I think it's, you know, all those epics that came out, The Robe and Ben-Hur, all those biblical epics. I think it's better than any of those, although it's not particularly biblical. But it's a great action film. It's wonderfully directed by Stanley Kubrick. And I could watch Spartacus again and again. What's your number two, Jim?
We're on the same boat on that. Number two is Spartacus for me. And if just for that great scene with Woody Strode, where they're thrown into the sort of the Colosseum area, and they're fighting each other for the pleasure of the Romans, for the entertainment. And it's a great sequence. And I think that sequence was turned into a big display at the Hollywood Wax Museum. Had both of them in their in their garb. And this you know, gets the social conscience of Kirk, plus it's sort of a macho role. He's wearing pretty much bathing trunks through most of it, and it's a terrific sweeping film with a hell of a cast. You got Laurence Olivier and Tony Curtis and it's great. Oh yeah, it's a terrific epic film.
And George Kennedy in its movie debut.
Yeah, Harold Stone is in it, and it's based on a novel by Howard Fast, and it's Dalton Trumbo again.
All right, and Lynn, your number two would be
Paths of Glory.
Paths of Glory is Lynn's number two.
Yes, it's
also Stanley Kubrick.
Yes, Stanley Kubrick, and it's a great war movie. It's one of the first that dealt with the horrors of war.
I apologize for not being entirely honest with you. I apologize for not revealing my true feelings. I apologize, sir, for not telling you sooner that you're a degenerate, sadistic old man. And you can go to hell before I apologize to you now or ever again.
Anti-war.
Yeah, it's set in World War I, though, isn't it?
Plays Colonel Dex, who's... And I think he's commanded to take over Ant Hill, which is a suicide mission. And actually, that's my number one. Paths of Glory. It's my favorite Stanley Kubrick movie. George MacReady is maybe my favorite villain in cinema in that film. And there's also Adolf Monjou. Also, everybody's a villain in that film except the three guys that they execute. Tim Carey and who's the dude that was the bartender in The Shining?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I can't recall the actor's name.
He's still around.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
I absolutely love Paths of Glory, and I had never seen it on the big screen until just this past spring. They showed it at the Tivoli, on Wednesday night. So I went and saw it. And
boy, very powerful.
It's amazing. It is. Jim, what's your number one?
Boy, well, when we were talking a little bit ago, when I heard Bad and the Beautiful, thinking I should have picked that one because that's a really great one too. Mm-hmm. But Kirk to pick three from his long career, it's tough. But this was first recommended to me by our mutual friend Rick, and it's a little quiet black and white film he did in the 60s called Lonely Are the Brave, which is from writer Dalton Trumbo also. It's directed by David Miller. And Kirk is playing this fella. His name is Jack Burns, and he's an old cowboy, an old cowhand, I guess, from the Rio Grande. And he's just not adjusting well to modern life. He still rides his horse around everywhere. There's some great sequences of him on the highway with cars passing by him on horseback. And he's kind of got a thing for Jenna Rollins in it, even though she's married to a buddy of his, and his buddy has been thrown into the local jail. And Kirk's character decides, well, I'll get arrested, and I'll get into jail with him, and I'll help spring him out. But, of course, nothing works out as planned. The sheriff in it's Walter Matthau. The deputy, again, is George Kennedy.
Isn't Carol O'Connor in there?
Carol O'Connor is in that. That's
one
of his
truck driver?
It's his first film. Yeah, I believe so. And William Shallard is in it. We just lost him a couple of years ago. And I recall at the end of it, without giving a lot away, he does bust out of jail. And he's being pursued by the law, and they even send helicopters after him. And I think one of the pilots of the helicopter is Bill Bixby.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got a terrific cast, great black and white cinematography.
Does he turn into the Hulk?
No, he doesn't. No one makes him angry, luckily. It's a terrific kind of melancholy but really good action film. There's a terrific fight sequence in a bar where he actually gets into it with the actor that played the one-armed man in the TV show The Fugitive. Oh, yeah. And Kirk says, "Well,
Does he have two arms in this one?"
He has. You think he's just got one arm. The actor from The Fugitive, but Kirk says, "I'll put one hand behind my back."
Oh, so the guy really had one arm.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they go at it in this memorable scene, but it's a great film.
Good,
if you get a chance to catch it.
So. All right, and Lynn, what's your favorite Kirk Douglas movie?
Well, it was your number two, Spartacus. I have to go with Spartacus because it's just a larger than life hero.
My number one was your number two, and your number one was my number two.
I know. Cray cray. I know. And I could have gone with Lonely Are the Brave as my third choice, but then I had to go with Detective Story because it's it's such a wonderful detective story. And he went all genres, if you think about it. In his 91 credits, he, you know, he did sci-fi. He did
a comedy. Westerns, what was the one with Schwarzenegger, the villain?
The villain, yes. Yeah, he did a flat-out, like, Looney Tunes type comedy. Yeah.
And then Tough Guys, which is sort of an action comedy where he teamed up with Burt Lancaster.
Yeah, it was a big hit. Yeah, we never mentioned any of his team-ups with Burt Lancaster.
Out of the Past was the first.
And a gunfight at the Old Cape Corral.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a terrific film. Yeah, that gunfight. No, 7 Days in May, I think, is the one that they did. That's a good one. Yeah, the Colt K. Corral is great.
All right, so happy birthday to Kirk Douglas, who turns 100, and maybe he'll make some more films. I don't know what kind of health he's in.
Well, I don't think it's too good.
But when you're 100, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right, so happy birthday, Kirk.
Yes.
Okay, we got a lot of awards that were announced this past week. Jim and Lynn and I are in the St. Louis Film Critics Association, and the big St. Louis Film Critics Association awards will be announced. When will those be announced?
Well, Sunday, December 11th.
That's Sunday.
Yeah,
that's
we will announce. Yeah, we will announce the nominees.
The nominees.
Oh, the nominees.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
The actual awards will be the following Sunday, the 18th. Yes.
We could announce them at my Christmas party.
That's right. Well, we'll announce the nominees on the podcast next Monday morning.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Yeah,
All right, exciting. So some of the less prestigious Critics Awards are like the L.A. Critics and the New York. And
what do they know in L.A. about movies?
They didn't wait to see what the St. Louisans were up to. L.A., okay, seems like every year there's some movie that the critics just fall head over heels for, and I just scratch my head and say, what the heck? And this year that movie is Moonlight. It's won Best Picture at the L.A. Film Critics Society. Are they kidding me?
No, it's a strong film,
I think it's an awful film. Oh. And what the hell is it about, even? I watched it, and it won Best Director, and I just think every single little 360-degree camera pan and slow-motion shot and loud, beautiful music playing over close-up to people's face I've seen in so many movies, I don't get it. But you guys seem to have liked Moonlight.
Yeah, you'd like that, didn't you, Liz?
I did
best
like it.
Best Picture, really?
We will put it in the... I think it'll be one of the nominees for Best Picture from us, probably.
Right. I do think Mahershala Ali is fantastic.
And what's it about? It's about a gay kid who has a gay sex on the beach, and then 15 years later, he's a drug dealer, and he meets up with this guy again and tells him that he hasn't had gay sex until he's reconnected with this guy. I mean, come on.
It's about a fellow finding his sexuality, and it's in a different setting, in the black community. It's quite a different thing than the coming out stories from the white America. I think.
I don't think it's anything new. Like people are saying,
I don't think it's anything new at all. I'm getting tired of movies like this.
But I also think that it's a powerful story because of the drug addict mom and the horrible. The need for a connection that he had.
Yeah, I will say, is it Naomi Harris? Is that her name? I didn't realize that was Moneypenny until about halfway through. And then I was impressed. She clearly has a lot of range that actor.
Yeah, and Mahershala Ali, his character is interesting. You know, you're prepared to hate him because he's a drug dealer. But something in this kid, it sort of sets off his fatherly instincts. And he's actually a good influence to this kid. He's actually cares about him, which is kind of a nice thing to see in a film.
And the kid glommed on to him as a father figure. That scene where that Juan teaches Sharon how to swim, that really happened in terms of the kid didn't know how to swim. I think it's a powerful example of a human story, you know.
Yeah, and Desmond Doss saved 75 people from Hacksaw Ridge, and that's a true story as well. But you don't see Hacksaw Ridge on any of these lists.
Well,
there's a story we should be celebrating.
Well, it is a person we should be celebrating. I don't know if we should be celebrating the film.
The way Mel Gibson told his story should be winning all these awards. You know, all these awards have gotten so freaking political. The only reason Moonlight's won anything is because it's checking the right boxes. The guy's gay and he's black. You know, Hacksaw Ridge, it's about a guy who's religious, can't have that. It's all white, can't have that. It's sort of jingoistic, can't have that. 20 or 30 years ago, Hacksaw Ridge is the only movie anybody would be talking about for awards. I don't think something like Braveheart would even win the Oscar for Best Picture these days.
Well, Hacksaw Ridge is on the top 10 of the National Board of Review. The National Board of Review comes out first. And so they do have it on there. And
Let's talk some more about some more of the. I'm just on a little soapbox here.
Sure.
Okay. L.A. film critics gave Best Picture to Moonlight. They do a runner-up, La La Land. I think La La Land has a better chance of winning the Oscar.
Well, certainly, yeah. Yeah. I think I said last week that I think that L.A. Land will get the Best Picture Oscar. And I don't know. Kate's choice was Manchester, and I think it could be close between
Manchester
them.
Doesn't seem like the kind of movie that wins the Oscar for Best Picture.
But it's going to be in the mix because Casey Affleck's going to win for sure. Lucas Hedges might be up, and Kenneth Lonergan's going to win for Best Picture.
Michelle Williams better be up.
Yeah.
For Best Supporting.
I was really shocked, and I'm very happy to see this, that L.A. went with Rebecca Hall as the runner-up for Christine.
Oh, wonderful, yes.
And
nobody saw Christine.
Oh, but we did, and we liked it. Sure, her performance.
I got a link for it, but I haven't gotten around to watching it.
Oh, her performance
but
is
Isabel Huppert, and you guys are seeing Elle this afternoon. She's fantastic.
Right, and she was the
and
winner.
She is beautiful, and she's 63 years old. I looked it up. The character she plays in Elle is 50. You could have said that character was 40, and I still would have believed it. In fact, I just watched Heaven's Gate for the first time, which was made in 1980. That's the big Michael Pacino bomb. And she's the lead in that. And she looks exactly the same in Elle as she did 35 years ago in
With
Heaven's
Jeff
Gate.
Bridges and Christopherson.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good movie.
I'm sorry.
At least the director. All right, let's move on.
Adam Driver beat Casey Affleck out.
That's weird because I really liked Patterson. But I didn't really see a whole lot of acting from Adam Driver in that. There's no drama. There's no emotion. There's no conflict in the film.
He's just a regular guy.
Yeah, he just acts like he's being himself. Which maybe that's tricky. I don't know.
Yeah. It was an interesting film. We saw that last Monday. That comes out in January, I believe.
Yeah, no, it's a very good film. It's my favorite. Who's the director?
Oh, Jim Jarmusch.
Yeah, it's my favorite Jim Jarmusch movie in a long, long time.
It's a very slice of life, random events type of.
That's fine.
Best actor, and
Casey Affleck goes runner-up. Supporting actress Lily Gladstone, Certain Women,
and I know who she is. Well, I put her in my top five.
I haven't watched that yet.
She's the breakout. It's slow as molasses.
But she's
a young actress, an old actress, black.
Yes,
white?
No, she's young.
Is she the one with Kristen Stewart in the film?
She's the very shy ranch hand, and she comes to Kristen Stewart's night class.
Interesting. All right. And we go moving on. Runner up was Michelle Williams from Manchester by the Sea. Supporting actor Mahershala Ali, Moonlight. Runner up was Issy Ogata for Silence, which we haven't seen.
Yeah.
Oh, and who knows?
We'll get to see
animated film Your Name. Never heard of it.
I am not familiar with that.
There's a lot of good animated films this year, too.
Sure,
especially Kubo and the Two Strings.
Well, we're putting together the nominees for the St. Louis Film Critics, and there's the animated category will definitely be five this year, and the best song, we've got a lot to choose from this year. I'm really surprised. Okay.
Runner-up Red Turtle. Did you see Red Turtle, Jim? They play that as Slip.
Did not get to see
that. Yeah, no.
That's from the Studio Ghibli people, I think. Yes.
All right, let's move on. Foreign language film is The Handmaiden. I got the screener. I haven't watched that
yet. I watched Handmaiden over the weekend. It's hot stuff, baby.
I interviewed the director. He did Stoker.
Okay. Yeah,
he came to Hollywood and did Stoker. Actually, he was filmed in Tennessee, and then he went back to China, or Korea, actually, and made The Handmaiden. Runner-up was Tony Erdman. There was a screening of that last week.
There's one tomorrow.
It's tomorrow at 11.
Yes. But Handmaiden is one for when the kids are in bed. You don't want to. Okay. It's definitely an adult film.
All right. Documentary, I Am Not Your Negro.
I enjoyed that movie.
Yeah. I watched it over the weekend. Yeah. It's not my choice for best documentary. It might be in the top 10, but there's a lot of good ones.
Race?
Yeah, pretty much through the eyes of James Baldwin.
Yeah, the late author James Baldwin, it's his words, but it's about modern pop culture. Blacks in modern pop culture, plus the civil rights fight, his relationship with Medgar Evers and Martin Luther King. Okay.
And Malcolm X.
Speaking of blacks in popular culture, the runner-up was O.J. Made in America.
Which we haven't seen. I think that was on ESPN, wasn't it?
But that's different than the mini. Did they make a miniseries with Cuba Gooding?
That's fictional.
This is different.
This was a documentary that was on ESPN. I'm assuming ESPN. It got a limited theatrical release, probably in L.A. and New York. Right. So I've seen it pop up in a couple of lists.
Well, maybe we'll get a screener for that. Screenplay went to The Lobster. That actually was a very clever screenplay. I really like the screenplay for The Lobster.
It's a good screenplay.
Runner-up was Manchester by the Sea, which is probably a slightly better screenplay.
Yeah.
But they gave it to The Lobster. Editing, OJ, Made in America. So they gave editing to a documentary. That's interesting.
Yeah, yeah, very interesting.
Runner-up was La La Land, production design, blah, blah, blah. All right, let's move on.
Well, the New Generation film, Krisha, that is getting good buzz.
I watched that this weekend.
How was it?
Okay. It's brutal, man. It's a rough one. You know?
We got to move along. Okay. Lifetime Achievement Award went to Shirley MacLaine. Okay, New York, they gave Best Film to La La Land, and they gave Best Director to Moonlight. They gave Best Actor to Casey Affleck and Best Actress to Isabelle Huppert.
Yeah.
Best Supporting Actor, Maharishi Ali, Moonlight. Best Supporting Actress, Michelle Williams. Now, this list seems a little more conventional than the L.A. Screenplay, Kenneth Lonergan, Manchester by the Sea. Cinematography, Moonlight. Foreign Language Film, Tony Erdmann. So there's a lot of crossover here.
Oh, yeah.
Best Animated Film, Zootopia.
Which I agree with.
Yes.
And Best First Film, Edge of 17.
Oh, it's first film for that director. Yeah, that's pretty strong.
Yeah, tied with Krisha.
All right. And finally, let's talk about the National Review, which actually we should have talked about that first because they were the first to announce.
They're always the first.
We should have St. Louis be the first to announce.
We got to see them.
Got to get out in front of all these other critics.
They'll show them to us.
Online. All right, best film they gave to Manchester by the Sea. So all these have gone to different – best films have all gone to different films.
Those will be all up in the mix.
Best Director, Barry Jenkins for Moonlight again. What did Barry Jenkins direct before Moonlight?
Nothing, I don't think.
Well, he would have won Best First Film. I think he did direct something.
Yeah, it's a couple of small budget films.
Okay.
Best Actor, Casey Affleck. Best Actress, Amy Adams for Arrival.
That's a
bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah, that is. I think she'll be nominated. Definitely not for Nocturnal Animals. But they love Amy Adams because she's been nominated 5 times before.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. I would love to see, like I say, Rebecca Hall in the mix. I think Meryl Streep might sweep in and get one of them for Florence Foster Jenkins.
She always gets nominated. But I think Natalie Portman's the front runner for Jackie.
I'm seeing that in an hour.
Along with Emma Stone, and I think Ruth Nagel will be in there for Loving.
So, yes. Yeah. They totally forgot Loving on their top 10 list, which I definitely think it's a top 10.
Yeah.
Do you think they forgot it?
Really? No, I think they put Hail Caesar instead. They have Hidden Figures on there, which we saw.
Yeah.
That's Joy, who just walked by, Ron's wife. That's her favorite movie of the year, Hidden Figures. Although she slept through Man Down. I was sitting right next to her.
Oh, really?
I kind of envy her. I wish I'd slept through Man Down, gotten a good nap. All right, let's move along. Best Supporting Actor from National Board of Review was Jeff Bridges for Hell or High Water, and that's a good choice. He was
outstanding
in that
fabulous movie.
Best Supporting Actress from Naomi Harris for Moonlight. I just said a little while ago, I think she shows a lot of range as an actress. But I thought that was sort of a stereotyped crackhead mama role. I didn't think that was all that great of a character. Best Original Screenplay, Kenneth Lonergan, Manchester by the Sea. Best Adapted Screenplay, Jay Cox and Martin Scorsese for Silence. This is a movie that I'm certainly...
It's just screening now for critics.
Has it made any reviews out yet?
No, I don't think so. No.
It's got Adam Driver and
Liam Neeson and Andrew Garfield.
Now Andrew Garfield should be nominated for.
He's nominated for one of the things. I think he's up for a broadcast film. He's up for 2 broadcast film critics awards for that.
Right. I do think Andrew Garfield has a good shot at an Oscar nomination for Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah. And let's see. Best Animated Feature was Kubo and the Two Strings. I think that's easily the best. My favorite animated film of the year.
It's a darn nice one.
The Secret Life of Pets.
Oh, that ain't getting any nominations.
Breakthrough Performance. Lucas Hedges, Manchester by the Sea. Okay.
Yeah, female. Definitely. What a great kid performance.
Royalty Hightower. Is that really her name? Royalty Hightower.
And what is she from?
The Fitz.
I did not see that.
A lot of Independent Spirit nominations, and I've never heard of it.
Yeah. So, I'm having a fit just reading about it. Best Directorial Debut, Trey Edwards Schultz, Krisha. Best Foreign Language Film, The Salesman, never heard of it. Best Documentary, O.J. Made in America again. So
The Salesman is the Iranian director of A Separation, and it's kind of a take on Death of a Salesman, but it's in their country.
Okay, and Spotlight Award, creative collaboration of Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg. Okay.
Yeah, they've got 2 films this year.
Yeah, so. And they did that one last couple years
Survivor,
ago.
Yes.
Yeah, Lone Survivor, so good. Yeah, that's fine. NBR Freedom of Expression Award, camera person. I have no idea what that means, but we're going to have to wrap this up, doggone it, because we are running out of time. We'll be back next week, and we'll review lots of fun movies like Sing and Collateral Beauty and Why Him and Office Christmas Party.
Office Christmas Party.
Yes, but for now we've got to end of this show. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Betts.
Lynn Venhouse.
Thanks for joining us, Lynn.
Well, thank you for asking.
And everybody be sure to tune in again next week.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather.
Oh, naughty, Dave. Hello, darling. Hey, hey, hey.